This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Well, Emily Duncan is an Otapoti Dunedin-raised and based writer, dramaturg and director. She won the 2020 Bruce Mason Award, the 21 Adam New Zealand Play Award, as well as the Best Play by a Woman Playwright and the McNaughton South Island Play Award categories. She won the McNaughton Award again in 22 for her adaptation of Catherine Mansfield's The Woman at the Store. Emily was the University of Otago Robert Burns Fellow back in 2019, the co-founder of Prospect Park Productions, home of Otapoti Theatre Lab and Otapoti Writers Lab. Another distinction added to that, the Friends of Hocken Collection Award for 2022, and that's what we're going to be talking with Emily about today. Morena, good to have you with us, Emily.
Morena, thank you for having me, Jeff.
Phew, that was quite a list for me to get through.
I feel busy.
Well, I guess being busy is part of what that's about. But let's talk about this Friends of the Hocken Collections Award, because it's not something I'm familiar with. What can you tell us about it?
Well, as I understand it, it's only the third time it's been awarded, and I think they're doing it on a three-year cycle. So the Friends of the Hocken have this award that you can apply for $10,000. And the scope is really quite flexible as to what your research project will be. And I had this idea, some knocking around in my head for a while, that we're going to talk about today. And often when you have these ideas in the arts, you've got to find the right avenue that you could potentially get the resources to make it happen. And the award was a really good match to my mind, and the Friends of the Hocken agreed, which I'm really grateful for.
Well, I'm grateful for it too, because it's going to be so interesting. Establishment is a series of monologues that you've researched and written that explore the and celebrate the range of 20th century food venues and the people who dined and worked there in our beautiful city. So what was the seed of this idea for you?
So some of this ties into my PhD research, and I'll try to avoid going down the theoretical, you know, avenue too much. But I was thinking about restaurants as being, they're both public spaces, but people often visit them for very personal reasons. And people also have specific roles within a restaurant. So, for example, you know, if you or I were to go to the Perk, we don't just walk into the kitchen. You know, there are demarcated areas. And as a dramatist, that aspect of it really interests me. Also, the social history. While many of these establishments aren't operating anymore, the buildings are still around and about, and I quite find it quite interesting to sort of go around and think, hey, there used to be this place that was really popular in the basement of this building, and now there's barely a trace of it.
And how many scenes do we see set in dramas of one sort or another, in comedies as well, of course, around, you know, that conversation around the table in a restaurant?
Yeah, I was actually, it's probably not suitable for discussing here, but re-watched The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover the other night, and I was too young to see it when it came out, but that was such an extravagant piece based around a restaurant. And then, you know, another really lovely film that many people are probably familiar with was Babette's Feast, and while it's not in a restaurant, it's about this as such, if I remember correctly, it's about the whole preparation of the food. So I'm also really interested in, with this project, it's not just from one perspective, just the people who are going there to dine. I've tried to get a range of different roles and perspectives. So some of them are various staff working in the establishments, and yeah.
And what are you endeavouring to capture here? Is it is it history? Is it purely the theatre of it all? I mean, expand on that a little bit for us.
Yeah. So I have a few times delved into writing historical fiction, and also when I'm dramaturg for works that are historical fictions, I say to the playwrights I'm working with, you're not writing the history, you're not writing a lecture, you're not writing the Wikipedia page. If it's a work of drama, it's sort of filling this space that otherwise might not be covered. So you can think of it as an alternative way to accessing the history.
But you're not. This isn't a verbatim theatre or anything.
No. So drawing on lots of amazing archives from the Hocken, and I really want to emphasise that this research, besides the generous funding, would not be possible without the expertise of the staff, because they're so good at pointing you in directions that you might not think, to look at. So there are. I balance out like what aspects are historical fact, and then where might I work in the fiction to illustrate aspects of stories that aren't probably necessarily going to be shown otherwise.
You know, I've been in Dunedin my whole life, so I've seen many a venue come and go, Emily. I kind of think, oh my gosh, you know, when you start throwing up some names, you know, it evokes all sorts of responses in people and memories in people and slices of periods of history, you know, a particular decade or whatever it might be.
In times of their lives.
Yes, indeed, the things that are going on. So they are rich places in that regard, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. There's one particular. So, while I had to put in my proposal a list of proposed establishments, I didn't want to go in to the project so locked into these places. I also wanted to be open to other things coming up that staff might say, "Hey, have you looked at this?" And I didn't want to refuse myself that really great material. And then there were other places where initially I purposely avoided because I felt in some ways, I don't mean this as a criticism, but they were sort of too obvious. So a lot of people know about the Savoy and people have amazing stories to share about it. But again, coming back to this idea of drama, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good material for a monologue unless you can find a sort of specific angle that hasn't otherwise been covered. And so I put that aside. I didn't really consider it. And then a couple of things happened. Anna Peterson, who's, I apologise if I get her title incorrect, one of the photographic curators down at the Hocken, she had emailed me to say that the Hocken had come, they'd sourced these glass plate negatives from the 1930s of the Savoy. Would I like to come and have a look at them? And I sort of put that aside, and then I just happened to come across somehow else this club that used to exist in Dunedin. And I'm not going to give away what it was, but this club, unless it's very underground, it no longer exists. And it was very interesting. I was like, oh, I'm really curious to find out more about this. I went into the Hocken and looked at these glass plate negatives, and they were stunning. They're almost like, I think of them, the filigree of photography. They're so sort of delicate. But also, they had all these, there were all these images of staff in the kitchens, and you don't often see that covered. It's quite normal to have lots of, people take photos in restaurants if they're having a birthday or what have you, but not so much the staff. So that seemed like a really good thing to grab onto. And then this club that I found out about, I was aware that the National Library in Wellington had a copy of a menu from a particular dinner. I asked Catherine Milburn, who's in charge of ephemera at the Hocken, was there by any chance a copy of this menu at the Hocken? And she didn't think there was, not in her collection. But they did have this huge ledger of this club's minutes, which I got out, and it's this amazing big book with marbled end pages, and decades of people writing in fountain pen the minutes of their meetings, and they've also stuck in the pages all these very fancy menus from their big dinners, including the one I was after. And it's just like one of those bingo moments. You're like, ha, found it.
Oh, wasn't the Hocken wonderful? That's a really great example of
a long example.
Most of us would not know or even imagined existed.
Yeah.
Why would you keep things like that? Well, that's why.
And how do you file it like that?
Yes. So before we perhaps explore that a little bit more. We should probably tenderize our listeners a little bit more by letting them know how this is all going to culminate. What are you planning around that?
What am I doing with it? So in a couple of weeks, I am taking drafts of all the monologues I'm going to workshop them with two actors, Barbara Power and Phil Grieve, and director and dramaturg Kim Morgan. Some local people will be familiar with Kim and Matt. They had Johnny's Southern Kitchen years, and I thought they could be a really good match for this particular project because they have that hospitality experience. So we will workshop what I've got to see what flies and what doesn't, and then I will go away and redraft and more materials. And then the culmination of this project is during the Heritage Festival in October, there will be a public rehearsed reading at the Hocken.
Mm. And you mentioned monologues.
Yeah.
Okay, why that choice?
I've written quite a few monologues. I write an okay monologue. There's all sorts of reasons. I mean, practically speaking, monologues are quite efficient and economical. It also lends itself well to this format because I think I'm now up to almost a dozen different establishments across the whole piece. It lets you move quite efficiently from one place to the next. And also, I've got them ordered in a particular way at the moment, and that's one of the key things we're going to be testing in the workshop to see, does my ordering actually work? Because if it doesn't, I have to go away and rethink all of that. That'll be a little less painful, given that they're monologues. And it's like, okay, how can I move them around?
Mm. Yep. Did you draw from others in terms of that decision-making around the venues that you would choose? How did you do that initial piece of research to turn up the ones that pushed your buttons?
Yeah, I did my initial research myself. I started mainly looking at Papers Past, which is a really good resource. A few that I knew of, but was maybe either too young to. Because I never visited La Scala, but I know of it. One that I do remember going to, I went once, twice if I was very lucky, was Carnarvon Station in Prince of Wales.
Of course.
Yeah, and a kid in the 80s, it was incredible how they get these train carriages in the building. And I didn't ever want that fantasy bubble burst either. Big Daddy's, I was probably a bit too young to be a customer. But again, I thought that was a good one and that it contrasts so much with so many of the other ones I've got included, and there will be people wanting to share their stories.
I'm starting to feel very old. Okay. I remember pretty much all of the ones on the list so far. Yeah. Are you keeping the full list to yourself? I mean,
I've got three in particular that I would like to hear from people, and you'll have my email if you want to get in touch. In particular, I'm aware that there will be people who are closely connected, directly connected with these establishments, and I would like to invite some input on those three. So do you want me to say?
Please do.
So the first one is the August Moon restaurant, which was opposite Knox Church on George Street, and that operated, I'm not great at dates off the top of my head, I apologise, approximately 1971 to the early 80s.
Yeah.
I also am looking at La Scala, but in the early 1960s, and that's for a particular reason. Some of these are placed very specifically to show things that were happening. So, for example, quick Emily tangent, one place I'm specifically looking at how they worked around meat rationing when it was introduced in 1944. Believe it is interesting. They ate all sorts of stuff that we don't often see on menus nowadays. Yeah, and the ration amount was more than I understand the daily recommended intake of meat.
Mm.
So they were doing okay.
Yeah.
So I've got August Moon, La Scala in the early 1960s, and the other place that I would like to hear from people about is Big Daddy's in the very late 80s, early 90s, just before it closed.
Very few people will remember too much about the Big Daddy's, because of the time of the night.
Colourful.
Most people would visit it, I imagine. Yeah. Stick my hand
I
up.
I can keep things off the record.
For that one, as well, I can talk to you about it.
Yeah.
Okay, and as you've mentioned, of course, this is not purely from a punter's perspective, a consumer's perspective. It's people who are working there, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be so interesting to hear some of the experiences of someone who was working at Big Daddy's, wouldn't it?
They all have some stories.
For those three establishments, are you looking, do you have yet an idea of which angle you're taking on those?
I do. I have a draft of each of them, so I currently do have an approach I'm taking, but part of the reason I'm having the workshop this far out from the presentation is to just give me that space also. If something specific comes up that I think, okay, I need to rework this, I have the time and space to do that.
I'm imagining...
Are you about to share a story, Jen?
No, no.
Okay.
Turn the
microphones.
The public presentation of this will be evocative, and I guess that's one of the reasons you've chosen a project like this, right? It's often the case when we attend... a piece of theatre that is so evocative that we get a chance to reflect on that. Is that going to be part of the process? Do you expect the audience will go, right, thanks for that, Emily. Now I just want to share with you all of my experiences.
I mean, part of the discipline of doing this project is deciding, okay, I need to stop taking on board material or stories as great as it is, and I've got to knuckle down and write the things. So we have the reading scheduled for 2 p.m. on Saturday, the
7th of October.
Thank you very much. At the Hocken. And part of the reasoning with that scheduling is that there is plenty of time, but not too much time afterwards if people want to share stories. I mean, at 5 o'clock, we have to get out of there.
Okay. We've seen some great examples of verbatim theatre recently, haven't we, which sort of in some regards has done something of what you're doing here in terms of recording stories in as real a terms as it possibly can be. But this is theatre for you, right? This is fiction ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, a parallel I would draw, I'm no way suggesting I'm up there with her, but Dame Hilary Mantel writing about Thomas Cromwell and Henry VIII, which, you know, some of us can remember back to history at school and think, God, that's quite dry material. She wrote these historical fictions in a way that's, they're such page turners. Yeah, it's another way of accessing the material.
Well, can't wait. This is such an interesting project, and great that the Friends of the Hocken Collections Award enables you to pursue it in the way that you want to. So we've heard Emily wants to hear from anybody who might have something to share in relation to those three venues. Best way to get in touch with you is what email is it?
Email Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, at prospectpark.co.nz.
And you can get in touch with the station, of course, if you want to get more details about that. We'll certainly pass your contact details on to Emily. You've mentioned Prospect Park Productions. Let's just divert for the moment. What are you at the moment?
Well, probably the main thing that people should know about, I think they've still got a bit of time to apply for this year's Otipoti Theatre Lab Playwrights Program. So each year we take three emerging playwrights, and there's quite a loose definition around that. There's plenty of information on our website, who have an idea for a short play, and we match them with the best dramaturg / mentor for them in their project, and they work together on the script over the next 10 weeks. And at the end of the 10 weeks, there is a public reading presentation, and this is our fifth year, I think. I think H.J. Cookalley, the other half of Prospect Park, and it's probably the child we're proudest of, if we're allowed to say that. Yeah.
Okay, so more information on that from the Prospect Park Productions website, I imagine?
Yes, yep. And all our social media. So if you, Otipotti Theatre Lab and Otipotti Writers Lab in Prospect Park, yeah.
You'll find all the links there. So you are busy, as we said at the start of this short chat.
Yeah. Well,
great to catch up with you, Emily. Thanks so much for taking some time. Just a reminder that that public session is Saturday the 7th of October at 2 o'clock in the seminar room at the Hocken Collections in Anzac Ave. It is a free session. Might it be necessary to book closer to the time,
I think? Closer to the time we'll probably... Yeah,
we'll pass on some details about that. In the meantime, Emily's still hard at work and ready to hear from those of you who might be able to connect her with some stories or ephemera from around that time. I'm sure it will help to flesh out the plans in relation to that. And we look forward to seeing which other Dunedin establishments are investigated as part of the series. And you know... Well, let's keep some of it secret, because I'm sure there are others who are thinking right now, well, I just wonder which ones will be featuring. Emily Duncan, thanks for joining us on the Awesome Morning Show.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.